We get things underway, though, by welcoming into the program a talented actor, writer, director, getting ready to make his Broadway debut in The Collaboration, playing at the Samuel J. Friedman Theater. Eric Jensen joins us. Eric, thank you so much for being with us.
Hey, Rich. Thanks for having me here, and hi to Carrie and Bruce as well.
Man, so excited for this show. It sounds like a wonderful play, a great cast with you, Paul Bettany, Jeremy Pope, and you play a very interesting character, the art dealer Bruno Bischofberger, who was instrumental in bringing together Andy Warhol, Jean-Michel Basquiat. Can you tell us a little bit about the play and what audiences will get to see?
Great. Well, the collaboration is about the famed collaboration between Andy Warhol and Jean-Michel Basquiat. Andy Warhol, who was of one generation in the pop movement, and Jean-Michel Basquiat, who was in another generation of what's called the neo-expressionist movement. Both roads sort of met through Bruno Bischofberger, who is one of the most prominent art dealers of the 20th century. He is fortunately still with us, and it was a bit of between Warhol and Basquiat. It was a bit of a rivalry. It was a bit of a competition. It was a bit of them learning from each other. They were kind of suspicious of each other at first, but finally came around. And at the end of the day, the collaboration is really a love story.
This is part of what Anthony McCarten calls his worship trilogy, looking at our fascination with religion, art, and money. What have you learned about that fascination, and what drives us to look at art in that certain way?
Well, I don't know. You know, lately I've been thinking a lot about AI, artificial intelligence, and artificial intelligence created art. And I've pretty much decided that you can't have art without the human component that goes behind it, the suffering, the doubt, the fixations, the good habits, the bad habits, the wild discoveries. You know, collaborating is hard. I collaborate with my wife. We write and make films together. And when you're collaborating with a machine, it's one of you has a soul and the other doesn't. So collaboration is kind of a holy act, and it brings out sometimes the worst in us, but ultimately at the end of the day, I really believe that the act of collaboration brings out the best in us. Nobody can do anything alone in this world.
You have done so much. You have certainly worked off-Broadway and television and film, but this is your Broadway debut. Not official yet. You're in previews right now. The opening is coming up on the 20th of December, but what has that experience been like for you so far?
Well, it's been super interesting. I mean, in February, I had a what's called a subarachnoid hemorrhage in my brain. I almost died, and we were doing a play with Steve Earle called Coal Country, and I was at home, and my wife was directing tech, and she got the call from our assistant that I was in an ambulance on my way to Bellevue to get an MRI. The subarachnoid hemorrhage, this phenomena takes out about 50% of people immediately. And then of the 50% who survive, 80% have permanent cognitive and or physical, disabilities that they have to, overcome. And, for me, I got very, very lucky. I dodged all the bullets, within about 3 weeks after having the aneurysm. It was okay. And, you know, almost dying makes you reorder your priorities from A to Z. And I was fortunate enough to be in London to see a woman named Emilia Clarke, who was in Game of Thrones. Mm. I saw her in The Seagull on stage. And Emilia has written about having had two aneurysms during Game of Thrones.
Right, right.
And I saw her beautiful, amazing performance on stage. And I said, you know what? If she can do it, I can do it. And she was a big inspiration to me, so I came back to New York and asked my agents if they might not consider putting me up for some larger, more challenging stuff, and the first thing that came along was this play.
Did you have any concerns, worries, I'm sure, about the mechanics of acting, learning lines, things of that sort?
Maybe for like a half a second, but you know, I've been doing this since I was 12 years old, and at least in community theater and stuff, and so those muscles don't go away easily. I'm having a great time. I'm acting with Paul Bettany, which makes me Avenger adjacent, and Jeremy Pope, which I think makes me multi award winner Jeremy Pope Jason, and Krista Rodriguez, also who stars in the show. And it's a good four-hander. We're the Four Musketeers. We're not the Avengers, but we call ourselves the Reliables.
We're talking with Eric Jensen here on Downtown. You mentioned your collaborations with your wife, Jessica Blank, and some really interesting projects. Well, what you call documentary theater, can you explain what that's about?
Yeah, sure. What we do with documentary theater, we've done several plays in this style as we travel around the country or around the world and pick a subset of people to interview. And we take those interviews, turn them into transcripts, and then spend time workshopping the transcripts with actors to find the play that is contained inside. The first play that we did that we're most known for is a play called The Exonerated, which premiered over 23 years ago, I think. And ran off Broadway for a couple of years and had people like Mike Farrell was involved in it.
Great friend of our show.
Yep, he's a wonderful guy. He was on our board initially, and then he helped us give a command performance for the governors of Illinois as George Ryan was trying to figure out whether or not to have the death penalty in his state or not. And after seeing The Exonerated, he really didn't look back. I mean, he said that in his book. I'm not saying that, but he said that in his book about making the big decision. And so we've done that with other things. We traveled around the world and interviewed Iraqi refugees in Jordan during the war. We traveled to Appalachia, to a small area in West Virginia, and interviewed survivors of a coal mine disaster there that took the lives of 29 men. We believe it was an avoidable incident. And Steve Earle, the alt-country singer, did all the music for the play for us and, you know, released an album of that stuff. People can hear that on Audible if they want to look up a play called Coal Country. It's on Audible, so people can take a listen to it. But we find great joy in finding these stories and talking to people in an open and honest way, and it makes it very easy for audiences to step into their shoes. And some people call it social justice work. I don't call it that. I think it's just human work, and it's the art of listening, something we need to get better at doing, all of us right now.
Well, no question about that. I want to see all of them if given the opportunity. I'm especially drawn to How to Be a Rock Critic. I would love to see you play Lester Bangs.
Well, How to Be a Rock Critic was we approached the Lester Bangs estate and asked if we could have access to everything that he wrote because we wanted to make a play about it, and it turned into a 90-minute one-man show that I starred in, one-person show, and my wife directed me in it, and it is the most exhausting and brutal and wonderful experience I've ever had inhabiting Lester's words. It was all based on his writing. And right now, we've attached a wonderful actor to the movie that we're making based on the play, and we hope to be off the ground with that sometime in the next year or so. It's a small movie with a big budget for music.
You've done a lot of terrific television work as well. Being in a cultural phenomenon like The Walking Dead as Dr. Steven Edwards, how does that change your life when you are instantly recognizable to so many people to a show that has so many fans worldwide?
Well, you know, I was in season 5, and I got what I got. I think if I'd been in more than like 3 or 4 episodes, I think what I would have gotten is a lot of the attention that a lot of my friends on the show get constantly. I got a lot of things like, did I go to school with you? Do we live in the same neighborhood? Do we shop at the same store? And no. Well, how do I know you? Well, I'm on TV sometimes, and they'll say, are you on this show? No, are you on that show? I was like, I was on The Walking Dead. Oh, I don't watch that. Too scary for me. Too scary for me. But, you know, I'm a big horror fan and a big fan of the show and a big fan of what they've done over the past decade with the show. So it certainly brings you a kind of attention that you never expected to get.
You are also in several episodes of Mr. Robot, and what a great ensemble that was to work with.
Yeah, I mean, that was stylistically, it's the difference. The difference between doing Walking Dead and Mr. Robot is the difference between doing Samuel Beckett and doing, like, a very strict Shakespeare play. Mr. Robot, stylistically and culturally, it was just such a significant achievement, and I was really excited when Rami was doing the Queen movie and got his nomination, et cetera, et cetera. I'm really grateful to all of the people who were involved in that.
I'm surrounded by Yankee fans here in the studio, so I have to mention your wonderful work as Thurman Munson in The Bronx Is Burning.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I've only played three real people in my life. Bruno Bischofberger here in the collaboration, Lester Bangs in How to Be a Rock Critic, and my favorite role of all time was Thurman Munson, number 15 captain of the Yankees who died tragically in a plane crash. But there was so much more to him than that. I gained 26 pounds for the role, much to the complaint of my knees. And I got to hang out with real New York Yankees. I got to catch behind Daryl Strawberry for a charity game, which was the thrill of a lifetime. And I just felt very lucky to play this guy. And I after I gained the weight, I was a spitting image for him. And the second I walked out of my trailer in the pinstripes, a teamster pulled me aside and he said, "Don't screw this up." So that was my vote of confidence from the teamsters. And by all other people's accounts, I didn't screw it up. So I can walk away with that feather in my cap. Yeah, it's been a weird life, man. I started off as a cartoonist for High Times magazine, and then the acting stuff took off, and all of a sudden I was doing TV movies on Hallmark, and then I met my wife and we were writing and directing movies together, and it's just been an endless surprise. And Broadway was not on the bucket list, but after I had my aneurysm, that changed, you know. And I have a wonderful daughter too, who's now joining the family business. She's going to start doing some acting now at age 13. And I got to warn y'all, she's better than I am. So here she comes.
Well, 8 shows a week. What's the biggest challenge of that, and what's the most rewarding aspect of doing that?
I think the biggest challenge of doing multiple shows per week is to try and keep your edge and not repeat yourself. I mean, it's sort of like being in a jazz quartet, and you have your good days and your not so good days when you're in a jazz quartet. But you know, getting the basic message across without it looking stale to people is quite a challenge. And on those days, I rely a lot on technique, and on the days that we're really inspired and it's just going great guns and we can do no wrong, those are the days that I live for. Right now, it's a lot of young audiences, a lot of new audiences coming to the play. The fact that they're learning about Warhol and learning about Basquiat through this incredibly dynamic piece of work is pretty thrilling to me. I always knew about these guys. I had an uncle who was a painter. He used to take me to the Walker Museum in Minneapolis, and so these guys were part of my life from when I was very, very young. Interview magazine was like, I had copies of that, and I had, I had a real strong connection to Warhol and Basquiat, and it's really an honor to be a small part of their story.
Well, we didn't have live theater for the most part for a couple of years. It's so great to have it back, and as an actor, to get that immediate feedback, to feel that audience with you when you're on stage, that has to be like nothing else.
It's like nothing else. You know, I was in a jam band for a while. I'm sorry to all those people who hate the Grateful Dead. We did a lot of Grateful Dead covers and we jammed out. And, you know, this is the first play that I've been in that's got elements of that in it. You're really riding the wave of the audience. They're the other character in the play every night. They're the unpredictable element. And we can be reliable in what we do, but, you know, they bring a certain sense of unpredictability and joy to what we're doing. And boy, do people need theater. People really need art right now. And if there's any message that this play about two artists is hot, is that we really need art. We need artists. We need each other. And we are a reflection of each other. And, on a good day, we manifest that. And I'm really proud to be able to be doing that.
The Collaboration, playing now, opening officially December 20th at the Samuel J. Friedman Theater on Broadway. Eric Jensen, so great to talk with you. Thanks for making time with us this afternoon, and break legs.
Thanks for having me. Thanks, Rich, and best to Carrie Bruce and everybody at the show, and I can't wait to listen to you.
All right. Thank you, Eric. Eric Jensen on Downtown.